A grant from The Great Impasta, a restaurant serving foods from northern Italy. The Great Impasta is at 114 West Church in Champaign. The staff at The Great Impasta encourage you to join them in supporting WILL AM 580.
Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. I should say welcome back to the second hour of the program. This is our morning talk show. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers for the program, Harriet Williams and Martha Deal, and at the controls this morning is Henry Frayne. Later on this week, a number of very big names in the world of sports are scheduled to appear before Congress. The subject, the use of performance-enhancing drugs in sports. A number of big baseball stars have been called to testify. There's some question about whether they will, but subpoenas have been issued for Jason Giambi, Sammy Sosa, Mark McGwire. Also, the commissioners of professional baseball and football have been called to appear. And that tells you something about the concern these days about the use of these drugs. Also, just to add to that, a poll conducted not very long ago by the Associated Press, this was last spring, found that 92% of Americans believe that steroids were a problem in sport. 43% said drugs were a major problem. There is reason to be concerned, not just about use of these kinds of performance-enhancing drugs by professional athletes, but also by amateurs, people even as young as high school have been experimenting with them. And it seems that the numbers of young people saying that they have used these drugs is on the increase. We'll talk this morning with a guest who has a special expertise in this field, drug use in sports. His name is Dr. Gary Wadler. He is the lead author of a standard textbook on this subject. It's titled Drugs and the Athlete. He serves on the World Anti-Doping Agency's Prohibited List and Methods Committee and also has served on its Health, Medicine, and Research Committee. He has received a lot of recognition for his work, in fact, in the field of drugs and sports. He received the International Olympic Committee's President's Prize in 1993. He is often interviewed and quoted in the media. He maintains a private practice in internal medicine and sports medicine in New York. He's also an associate professor of clinical medicine at the New York University School of Medicine, and he's joining us this morning by telephone. And as we talk, questions from people listening are welcome. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, 333-9455. Now, we do also have a toll-free line, and that means if it would be a long-distance call for you, you're listening in and around Illinois and Indiana, or if you're listening on the Internet, as long as you're in the United States, you can use the toll-free line, and that's 800-222-9455. 333-WILL and toll-free 800-222-WILL. Dr. Wadler, hello.
Good to be with you.
Thank you very much for talking with us. We certainly appreciate you giving us some of your time. How widespread is the use of performance-enhancing drugs? And particularly here, I'm interested in what you might say with some level of certainty about younger athletes, maybe at the collegiate level or in high school or maybe even younger.
Well, we certainly have a lot of data in recent years, and it's been tracked for more than a decade of use in our high schools particularly. The most recent surveys refer to Monitoring the Future, which is sponsored by the National Institutes of Drug Abuse, show about 3.4% of 12th graders have used anabolic steroids at some point in their lifetime. And the most disturbing, perhaps, is between 2 and 2.5% of eighth graders have used it at some point in their lifetime. Contrast that, for example, there's another study called the Youth Risk Behavior Survey, which looks at grades 9 through 12. And if you compare 1991 with 2003, it's gone from 2.7% up to 6.1%. So you're talking significant numbers in the hundreds of thousands, and that's a very alarming situation.
And you feel, since these are studies that are based on self-reporting, you think that those numbers are pretty good. You'd have to think that there might be some students, some kids who had used them who wouldn't want to say, and maybe some who have used them and who have not used them, and for some reason they might say that they had.
Well, I'm not an epidemiologist, but my epidemiology colleagues feel these are fairly reflective of what's actually happening. There are issues of over and under reporting, as you suggest, but I think as a snapshot, it does give us a sense of the magnitude of the problem.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that, as I have looked at some of these numbers, too, that have appeared in print that seems to be quite striking is, as you say, that overall there has been this this increase in the numbers, but it seems that for girls, the increases have been even more significant than they have been for boys.
Yeah, there are actually some studies, and although those are not in the majority, but there are studies that even suggest that girls have outstripped boys. You know, it's not only about athletics either. It's much, particularly in young people, about physical appearance and getting the what has become very in and chic these days to have a defined cut, six-pack ab look. And so there is this notion, this is restricted to the sports community, and I think particularly in young people, one has to go beyond that element in looking at the nature of the problem.
Well, that's an interesting point, and I have seen that as well, as some people might indeed think that what we're talking about here is serious competitive athletes who are looking to increase their performance. And at the professional level, I suppose that's about money, and at the amateur level, who knows what it's about, but I suppose there are a lot of people who are thinking about going for a professional career, or people who are thinking about that paying their way through college. But indeed, there does seem to be some people who are using this, let us say, for cosmetic reasons. They're simply interested in their appearance, looking muscular, and it's not because they're interested in becoming Olympic athletes or professional athletes.
Absolutely correct. You know, we are very much influenced our behaviors by what we see, and wasn't that many years ago that being twiggy in appearance was very chic and was in all the magazines, and people tried to emulate that, and we saw a lot of eating disorders and anorexia associated with those behaviors. Now we are seeing a different trend, and if you pick up any magazine or go on online on the internet, various websites, you'll see that kind of appearance, and there's a subtle message how you get that way. Much of this, in my view, has its roots, by the way, in a law that goes back to 1994, the Dietary Supplement and Health Education Act, which really resulted in an explosion of the use of so-called dietary supplements to achieve those kind of appearances. And as you know, one of those supplements was androstenedione, or Andro, the one that McGuire put on the map. And following his accomplishments, the sale of Andro exploded. But the fact of the matter is we have created a mindset that you need a pill or a powder or a potion to be the best that you can be. And I think that's a very dangerous mindset. Whether it's legal or illegal is a separate issue. But clearly the mindset is very disturbing to me. And you know, whatever happened to a well-balanced diet and a good exercise program? Now you need bottles and pills and powders.
How of the kind of substances that we're talking about, how many of them are clearly illegal and have to be purchased illegally, and how many of these are available as over-the-counter supplements that are legally available in places that sell those sorts of things?
Well, the vast majority are legal. We've seen in the past year, and I certainly have been one that's been rather vocal about it, two of them have been reclassified. Ephedra has been removed from the shelves by the Food and Drug Administration following the death of Stephen Beckler, the baseball player, from heat stroke. And more recently, we've seen androstenedione not only no longer considered to be a supplement, but is one of the most regulated drugs in the country, along with all the other anabolic steroids. So we are seeing some of the mistakes of our ways in the past. And, you know, even, for example, as we speak, Ephedra is off the shelves, but another supplement has replaced it called Synephrine. So now you see advertising to young people saying, get lean, Ephedra free. So it's a moving target. I personally believe it would be of use not only to have hearings about professional baseball, but perhaps at some point to revisit the Dietary Supplement Health Education Act to see what has happened in its wake and to make the mid-course corrections that undoubtedly need to be made to make it a better piece of legislation.
Yeah. We have a caller here. We'll get right to them. Perhaps I'll just introduce very quickly again our guest. We're speaking with Dr. Gary Wadler. He is an authority in the field of drug use in sports. He is the lead author of a standard book on the subject, which is Drugs and the Athlete. He has private practice in internal medicine and sports medicine in Manhasset, New York. He's also an associate professor of clinical medicine at the New York University School of Medicine and is frequently interviewed and quoted in the media on the subject. Questions are welcome. 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. Listeners, toll free 800-222-9455. We do have someone here on our line number one, a caller from Indiana. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Thank God you're a clinical chemist, because I've been wanting to ask these questions for some time now. If you could talk about it in some way. First of all, in dealing with the regular steroids, the group after a lot of usage, what harm does that do to the body? And especially recently, in regard to that young fellow in California whose parents talked him out of using the steroids, and he stopped abruptly, then he committed suicide. And I'll never forget, you know, when his father asked him, "Why are you doing this?" And he says, "Well, Barry Bonds does it." So these personality cults are going to cause us trouble. The next thing is the chemists who try to stay just a step ahead of the game. I remember sometime in the past they were talking about the steroids that were being used could not be detected. Now, they didn't explain whether that was could not be detected with the regular test we do now, or did they mean that the metabolites that were produced are undetectable, or the same kind of metabolites are already in the body so you couldn't, you know, differentiate whether somebody's actually using a new drug or whether it was just because he's eating apples or something along that line. If you could talk along about the chemistry of it, I'd really be interested. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
All right. Well, you bring up a number of points, the side effects, role model issues, and the chemistry. I think everybody's eyes focused on what happened in Balco because of a designer steroid referred to as THG, tetrahydrogesterone, and it is very similar to all other anabolic steroids, except that when we use traditional methods to detect it in the urine, the molecule disintegrated, and so there was no real trail left having used the substance. Like any war, you need good technology, but you also need good intelligence, and the intelligence was there, and the scientists were able to modify the approach for looking at the urine so that going forward, THG would not evade detection. But there is a game that's always going on in the clandestine world to try to come up with anabolic steroids that would not be detectable by the usual techniques. There's been another one that came out more recently, deoxymethyl testosterone, DMT, which is a very dangerous substance because the thing it's made with, lithium hydroxide, actually can explode in the process of making the steroid. And if you was not pure and ingested it, it can produce havoc with very dangerous side effects in the body. But it's a substance and a subject, I should say, that we watch very closely, and our scientists are very diligently in the labs developing methodologies which have gotten rather sophisticated, much more than years past, and so it's going to be much more difficult for people to evade detection.
Hmm.
Regarding the side effects, there are a litany of them. Some are predictable, some are not predictable. Some are permanent and some are not permanent. Some are physical and some are psychological, psychiatric. And examples of some that are not predictable, in the extent of heart disease, we do know that its effects on cholesterol are bad. That is, it raises total cholesterol and raises bad cholesterol and lowers the good cholesterol. And there's been a number of deaths of people in their 20s for which there was no other explanation, both from heart attacks and stroke, which we think can be attributed to steroids. If people take oral anabolic steroids, they can produce problems in their liver. That is kind of predictable. There are those things that are related to the secondary sex characteristics, so that because most of the anabolic steroids are converted in the body to the female hormone, estrogen, the male actually gets feminized and will have development of breast, will have problems with sperm counts, will have really a feminization, whereas girls taking it get masculinized, so they may get a deep voice, a male hair pattern, a large clitoris, menstrual irregularities, and those are almost guaranteed to occur in most people if you take it long enough. And then there's those things that are related to the, as I said, to the psychiatric area, which talks about things such as mood swings, anxiety. In the extreme, we refer to it as roid rage, and certainly it's been used in homicide defenses. And then something people don't realize, there's a dependency associated with it, so it's not that easy to get off it if you're using it for any length of time. And the tragedy you talked about, it was mirrored by another tragedy of the death of Taylor Hooten in Texas, a promising high school baseball player. Second cousin of Bert Hooten, who played for the Dodgers, who parents also had him go off steroids, and he went up and hanged himself in the bedroom. So the depression coming off steroids is a real, real phenomenon. It's one that causes great concern, and so it's a fairly complex subject, as you can see.
Yeah. Just maybe we should take a step back for those people who are listening who aren't up on the subject as much as the caller is. There have been many different things that athletes have taken because they believe they would enhance their performance. But it seems that right at the moment, the thing that's getting a lot of attention is the anabolic steroids, this large class of chemicals that, and again, as my understanding is, the purpose of taking these drugs is what happens is that once they get into your body converts them to testosterone, something that men and women both naturally produce, but in much smaller amounts than what people end up giving themselves when they take these drugs, that the reason that they do it is that it plays a role in building muscle. Is that correct?
Yes, it's reasonably correct. Anabolic steroids, first of all, I guess I should say what they really are, are synthetic derivatives of the male hormone testosterone. They're really there to function as a testosterone. The reason they come in a variety of forms really related to their medical usage. Most indications for using these drugs don't exist anymore. We have much better drugs to deal with many of the maladies for which we used these things in the past. So the biggest use of testosterone now is actually in men who are in later years who have low levels by virtue of cancer, of the testicles, surgery, trauma, radiation, or as just a process of aging. It's been used more recently in wasting diseases. So testosterone is a naturally occurring male hormone. There's a low level in females from the adrenal gland. Most of it in the male comes from the testicles, and there's a very narrow range where it normally belongs. People using anabolic steroids for their anabolic effect, their muscle-building effect, their tissue-building effect, take 10 to 100 or more times the dose that a patient would take for medical reasons. And they're always trying to come up with those anabolic steroids which have more of muscle-building properties and less of the secondary sex characteristics, but there is no one anabolic steroid out there that uniquely only does one or the other. You really get both effects. In a female, the amount they do have testosterone, it's a much lower level, but like adolescents, they're very sensitive to it because the receptors in the body normally are not bathed in teenagers or in women with high levels of this bath of testosterone. But when you put it in the system, it just, like a sponge, sucks it up, and you see a very pronounced effect in teenagers and in women which is somewhat different than from men.
Mm. We have talked about the negative side effects of the long-term use and also some of the problems associated with stopping abruptly. If someone develops muscle in that way, is the maintenance of that muscle dependent on continuing the drugs? And if someone, among the various side effects, if you stop taking the steroids, then over time, does that muscle mass that people have accumulated, would that actually decrease?
Well, that's a very poignant question, because it really gets to the heart of why we drug test and why we want out of competition testing. Because if you take testosterone in the doses that are being abused and you work out with resistive exercise, incidentally, if you just take testosterone and go to sleep at night, you're not going to get bigger. You have to put the muscles under some stress. And so you'll find these people tend to hang around gyms and press inordinate amounts of weights. But the effect of the enlarged muscle, those large muscles will stay for quite a while if you continue to work out, even though you stop the steroid. And so in trying to get around drug testing in elite sports, athletes had figured out before we figured out exactly what was going on here, they were stopping the drug before the testing began in various events while still carrying the benefit of enlarged muscles. Therefore, to really prevent this from happening, became obvious we needed to have out-of-competition, unannounced, random testing, because otherwise, as the expression goes, they were gaming the calendar, and they knew when how long the particular anabolic steroid they were taking was in their body. They would count backwards, know when to stop it, continue to work out, bring big muscles to the game, but negative urines in testing. And so that's why I have been particularly outspoken about baseball's proposal and the necessity for really having comprehensive year-round unannounced random testing to get around the very issue you raise.
Yeah. This gets to the issue of testing, and people have been very critical of professional sports in the United States for either not doing any testing at all or doing testing that's not up to what it should be. At least even the leagues that have testing, none of that, as I understand, conforms to the standards of the World Anti-Doping Agency. And there are in the NFL, the NHL, the hockey league, doesn't have any testing at all. Only recently has baseball and basketball started doing anything, and it's not. I know a lot of people feel it's not comprehensive as it should be. I think you have argued very forcefully for having tough testing of professional sports in this country. Why do you think that's important?
Well, I think it's the only way, realistically, to rid the sports of performance-enhancing drugs. And it's not just a matter of anabolic steroids. Depending on the sport, there are other drugs that one has to consider as well. But certainly, where education is important in deterrence, there's no question that testing at that level of sport is essential if you're going to rid the sport of performance-enhancing drugs. And I think if you're going to do it, then you got to do it in a well-thought-out way that recognizes the kinds of nuances I've talked about in terms of, for example, when you test and how you test to do that. And so there are gold standards. The gold standard, as you can imagine, I feel is present in the World Anti-Doping Agency's so-called World Anti-Doping Code. It's been very well analyzed over the past 6 years. I've been part and parcel of the process that has addressed that. And, either you're going to do it right or don't do it at all. And not doing it at all is unacceptable. And therefore, I think the time has come to hold professional sports leagues' feet to the fire. I would say the National Football League has been well ahead of other professional sports. And for a number of years now has mirrored the Olympic model quite closely. Not identically, but quite closely. But I think all professional sports would do well to use the the World Anti-Doping Agency approach to its anti-doping initiatives.
We are at our midpoint here. Just to introduce again our guest, we're speaking with Dr. Gary Wadler. He is a physician who specializes in the field of drug use in sports. He is the lead author of a standard book on the subject titled Drugs and the Athlete. He serves on the World Anti-Doping Agency's Prohibited List and Methods Committee. He's also served as medical advisor to the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy. For his work in the field of drugs and sports, he received the International Olympic Committee's President's Prize in 1993. He has private practice in internal medicine and sports medicine in New York and is also an associate professor of clinical medicine at the New York University School of Medicine. Questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. We do have a caller here to talk with, and they are on our line number one here on the campus. Hello.
Yeah, a comment and two questions.
Yeah.
The comment is, I think it's a shame Arnold Schwarzenegger is out there boasting about his previous steroid use and apparently being the poster boy for those people who think you can take it and get away with it and maybe even thrive after it. My two questions are, one is, you haven't mentioned, you talked about sports and that's the topic, but recently, I read that the police departments have been found to be rife with steroid use. They think it's an edge they get when dealing with perpetrators. And personally, I think they ought to be there ought to be a law against them not taking it because of the roid rage involved that you mentioned. And I would like a comment about that. And then my last question, and I'll hang up, is this a, when it comes to, like, high school athletes, is this something that only the more affluent athletes are likely to be able to indulge in, or is it cheap enough that everybody can get into it? And I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Okay.
Well, the issue of the police department has been raised years ago, and I don't have any data on that. Certainly, I'd rather not go in areas I don't really have any firsthand knowledge of, but certainly it's an issue that I know has been raised at least 10 years ago, and I'll best leave it at that. In terms of affluence and... These are not inexpensive drugs, but they're not prohibitively expensive either. Unfortunately, they're widely available. Much of it comes in from out of the country through internet purchasing. Some of it comes from through Mexico, Eastern Europe, I've said recently in the New York Times, at the end of the day, this is about drug dealing. It's another form of drug dealing. This is about money and big money, organized crime, and all the elements that go into other forms of drug dealing. This particular drug has been associated with not deterioration that we associated with methamphetamine and so on in terms of appearance, in performance. This, in fact, you look in the mirror and you like what you see, you're actually performing better, you're more assertive, you actually like what you're getting, and people are inadvertently are probably complimenting you because you've come out of your shell, you lost your body fat, you're more muscular. But strip that away and get down to the heart of this. This is drug dealing in a very pernicious way, and we shouldn't lose sight of that. And when there's drug dealing of this sort, it's about money, and like any forms of drug abuse, unfortunately, people will find money to participate in this behavior if they're so motivated.
Okay. Well, again, other questions are welcome from people who are listening. 333-9455. That's the Champaign-Urbana number. We do also have toll-free line. That's good it's good for anywhere. You could be listening if it would be long-distance call. That's 800-222-9455. We know that a number of athletes here either have admitted to using these or have been outed, and that you know, you want to take a look at them and their performance, and you wonder how much, what sort of role this play. For example, you know, Mark McGuire said that he had used this this androstenedione, which at the time he was using it was not banned. It was apparently legal, and this was at the time when he set a new record for hitting home runs. But I guess one has to wonder, and I don't know if this is a question that's actually possible to answer. Take him for example. Supposing that he had availed himself of everything that sports medicine has to offer to enhance performance that's considered to be legitimate. He did all that. Might he still have hit an awful lot of home runs? It just what sort of role, you know, they're called performance enhancing drugs, but just how much do they enhance performance?
Well, that's always a question, and I think people will be raising that question for years to come as we look at the Hall of Fame and people who are in it, particularly with home run records and so on. In baseball, perhaps it's useful to just briefly discuss why it might enhance a home run hitter, because there's other aspects of baseball which can be enhanced as well. But, you know, there's a law of physics saying force equals mass times acceleration. And if the mass is increased, which anabolic steroids does, particularly lean body mass, muscle mass, and allows you to accelerate the swing of your bat as it does, you'll have more force. And incidentally, if you want to understand acceleration, just for those who remember Ben Johnson bursting out of the starting box in 1988 in a sprint, that's acceleration. It's from 0 to 60. It's not the velocity of 60 miles an hour, but it's from a standstill to the speed you're trying to achieve. Well, bat speed is similar. From holding the bat still until the ball hits the bat, you're accelerating the bat. We know steroids can influence that acceleration. So if you multiply the increased lean body mass times the increased acceleration, you have more force. That force, when it hits the ball, the energy is transferred to the ball, and the ball will go that much further. So there's a good physics basis for understanding why people can be hitting the ball further and breaking records. So, and it's not the only aspect of baseball performance. Remember you're accelerating from home plate to first base when you're running out of a ball. When you're stealing a base, you're accelerating. It can affect that aspect of the game. In pitching, because steroids can improve recovery time, it's certainly conceivable that somebody who's throwing 95 miles an hour for every fourth day might be able to do it every third day. So that there are many aspects of baseball where steroids, at least theoretically, can enhance performance.
Well, let's talk with some other callers. Someone on a cell phone on our line number one is the next caller. Hello.
Hi. I'd like to make a comment, and maybe you can respond to this. First thing I want to say is I think that the use of the word drug dealing is a really cheap shot. It stirs people's emotional response to all of my physicians by drug dealers. They just simply have a state monopoly and are allowed to give me drugs as they see fit. And why doctors should be have a monopoly on that is a question for me. But I want to get to another point. Maybe we should consider denying Nobel Prizes to people whose intellectual achievement in science and in writing has been at all influenced by psychotropic drugs, possibly to ward off depression, caffeine, so they could keep writing. Why are we discriminating against people who do drugs for physical performance enhancement when we're not discriminating against people who are using drugs for psychological and intellectual enhancement? And my last question is, why are we worried about the use of steroids and other in enhancements for athletic performance when we're basically using Ritalin and other drugs to basically keep young people basically subdued in a classroom? It seems to me that we have a much bigger problem with the use of drugs to prevent people from expressing themselves fully, whether it's physically or mentally or emotionally, than we do with people take drugs for athletic performance. After all, there aren't that big a percentage of people who actually engage in athletic performance in the overall population, and maybe comment on those things that you say. Thank you. I'll hang on.
All right.
I had a little difficulty hearing some of it, but let me say, first of all, that in sport, we are governed by rules. I'm not talking about society in general. I'm talking about in sport. And those rules are arbitrary. There's 90 feet at the first base, 100 yards in a football field. You can't have too much of a curve in your hockey stick. You can't have iron in your boxing glove. And similarly, the rules say you can't have certain drugs in your body when you participate. And those are the rules. That's fact one. Fact two, anabolic steroids are highly regulated controlled substances in the United States. They're dangerous. They require two criteria to be fulfilled before they're used. There has to be a bona fide doctor-patient relationship, and it has to be for the legitimate treatment of a disease. Being an athlete, it doesn't qualify as being a disease. One can get into many philosophical discussions about all sorts of other substances. I don't think that's really what I'm here to discuss today. But I would tell you that we do make three factors that we consider in the World Anti-Doping Agency when we talk about any particular drug, whether it should or should not be on the list. One is, does it have the potential to enhance performance? Secondly, what is its effect, adverse effects on health? And thirdly, does it violate the spirit of sport or the spirit of the game? You have to have at least two out of the three, and that just enables us then to at least consider a particular drug. So there's nothing arbitrary about this, but we're talking, at least in the sporting world, in the context of sport, but we also have to recognize that it's a violation of federal law and has very serious consequences for their abuse, particularly by young people.
I have read other people raise that same question that the caller did, and perhaps truly the person to respond to that would be, we need to get a group of athletes in here perhaps to talk about the very thing that you had touched on, that is the spirit of sport, which has something to do with the idea of the level playing field.
Uh-huh.
And that performance-enhancing drugs, I think some athletes would argue, does not make for the proverbial level field. Do you, though, draw any sort of a line between the use of performance-enhancing drugs by professional athletes and amateurs? I suppose some people might say, well, those people, they're doing it for a living. If they want to do it and bear the consequences, that's kind of up to them.
Well, you know, it sounds mundane, but we are a nation of laws. And I don't condone any violation of the law. And certainly anabolic steroid abuse violates the law. So I think the discussion ends right there, from my point of view. I don't think it's just an issue of a level playing field. I think that's important. But, you know, we are a nation of laws. And just look how the laws have changed. Andro, which was considered a dietary supplement, was available. We recognized there were problems in the public health as a result of its being used, and we changed the law. Look at ephedra. We realized there were serious public health issues going on, and so the FDA acted to remove it from the shelves. So, you know, the discussion can go on at many, many, many different levels, and obviously over the years I've viewed this from many, many different levels, but sometimes I get down to what's the bottom line here, and there are some bottom line issues, and one of the real bottom line issues to me as a physician is a real risk to the public health, that is being the abuse of these drugs or the inappropriate use of these drugs is a real risk to the public health, which is creeping down into our junior high schools, and that to me is a great concern.
Hmm. Let's talk with someone listening this morning in Danville. This is the next caller, line four. Hello.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Well, first of all, I'd like to say that just because there's a federal law and people believe that because it's a federal law, it's moral, I'm not sure it's a justification for, you know, your position. But the question that I have is, you know, we have a pharmaceutical industry that is focused on profiteering, and part of their structure is advertising, and I'm wondering if there's any correlation between the amount of advertising that's gone on over the last several years and the increased use among especially teenagers and younger people of steroids. And I'll listen offline. Thanks.
All right.
Well, I think a good metaphor for that is was the androstenedione in 1998 when McGuire hit his 70 home runs. The sale of Andro skyrocketed following that. And so advertising, that was an advertising of sort. It was real-life advertising. It was very worrisome advertising. You know, there's a lot of things that influence human behavior, and I guess I haven't talked about it, is the issue of role modeling, which is a form of advertising. Mm. Not labeled as advertising, but that's what role modeling is. It's sending a message that you can be that if you do the same thing. And if one concludes that people are using drugs to achieve it and getting away with it, well, then we're sort of advertising that's the way to do it. And I submit strongly that's not the way to do it.
Yeah, I think what the caller is referring to was the fact that now over the last, I don't know how many years, we have seen a growing amount of advertising of prescription drugs, advertising those to individuals. And obviously the hope is that then the individual would see that and then they will go to their doctor and say, look, I need this. Will you prescribe it? And I suppose some people would make the argument that that promotes a kind of a mindset that says whatever problem you've got, we've got a pill to take care of it. And if you get people thinking that way, then not only would they use the legitimate ways to get the drugs, but they're also going to use the illegitimate ways.
Well, it's a double-edged sword. Certainly as a physician, I've seen very educated questions come directed at me as a result of things people have seen in the public media, which heretofore they had not raised. On the other hand, it does create a mindset that you do need a pill for everything in life, and I just don't believe that either. So it's a double-edged sword, and, that comes with the territory, I guess.
Yeah. Well, we have about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580, and again, I would like to introduce our guest. He is Dr. Gary Wadler. He's a physician, an internist with special expertise in this area, that is drug use in sports. He has a private practice in internal medicine and sports medicine in Manhasset, New York. He's also associate professor of clinical medicine at the New York University School of Medicine, frequently quoted in the media on this subject. He's the lead author of a standard text on this subject, which is titled Drugs and the Athlete. So if you were interested in reading about it in some great detail and with some analysis of the chemical structure of these things and what they do in the body, that would be the book that you could go out and look at. Questions are also welcome here on the program. Our numbers in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. That's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. We've talked quite a bit about the anabolic steroids, and this is a class of drugs that has gotten a lot of attention recently. Are there other things that are equally serious or almost as serious?
Well, yeah, certainly there are. And in fact, when I testify on Thursday, one of the points I will make, this is not a steroid policy issue we're talking about. This is a performance-enhancing drug issue, one of the ones that has come under increasing attention has been human growth hormone, which is a totally different kind of a substance, also used by those who are seeking to gain unfair athletic advantage by having big muscles. Using injectable growth hormone has very serious side effects associated with it, not detectable in urine. Only in blood. We tested it for the first time in Athens. We did 300 tests. They were all negative. Baseball has put that on the table. Unfortunately, the same time they put it on their banned list, said we cannot test for it by drawing blood, which is the only way to test for it. So I have no questions about that. The quintessential performance-enhancing drug going back into the 60s were stimulants, particularly amphetamines. They accounted for the first recorded deaths from performance-enhancing drugs, gave rise, in fact, to the banned list in the Olympic movement, in fact, gave rise to the Controlled Substances Act in the United States, and yet baseball for example, is not prohibiting amphetamines, even though it's a first cousin of ephedra, the very thing associated with the heat stroke death of Stephen Beckler. So there are a whole host of those in other sports. In endurance sports, one of our big problems, a substance called EPO, erythropoietin, which raises blood counts, very, very dangerous drug if abused. So there's a variety of things out there, and I suspect, and I've written about this not long ago, but over the next 10 years, I suspect we'll be seeing introduction of gene doping as the next thing that we're going to have to deal with.
All right. Well, we have some other folks here to talk with. The next caller in line is in Urbana, line number two.
Hi.
Yes.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
I wanted to share an experience and ask a question of you. This occurred, this story I'm telling you, occurred about 18 years ago. I had a girlfriend. Her son had been out of high school for 4 years. She also had three other children. And we were sitting around having dinner one day, and it came out that during his high school years, he had been given steroid shots by the coach, the football coach at our high. This is high school, not college or professional. High school, and it was quite common. And this boy ultimately wound up being, he's extremely obese, which does not run in the family. He's the only one that way. He also is in prison for embezzling from the family business and forging checks and that sort of thing. And I wondered if there could be a connection.
Well, I don't know. Certainly very disquieting to hear that a coach was injecting anabolic steroids, although clearly young people are getting these drugs from a variety of sources, and but that's disturbing in itself. And there are certainly people have observed that people have put on massive amounts of muscle, and in their later years wind up having some of that convert to fat. Whether that's attributable to that, I don't know. Certainly, I would think it would be less likely of those many years later that his criminal activities can be attributed to, specifically to steroids. I think the major part of your story is really what happened to him in high school, as you emphasized. And unfortunately, that's still going on, because when you, as I said earlier in the show, when you get more than 3-4% of high school students getting and using these drugs, they're getting them and using them one way or another, getting them. And I didn't mention, perhaps as much as I should, much of this is injectable more so than in years past, and carry with the risk of HIV and hepatitis. That's one of the reasons it's such a big public health issue, is some of the things you touched on.
Well, thank you so much for answering my question.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. Let's go to another caller. This is someone listening in Savoy, line number three. Hello.
Me?
Yes.
Maybe you all know the answer to this question. Maybe not. It seems to me that the drugs one gets at the drugstore is getting more powerful every year or so. Vioxx is much more powerful than aspirin and apparently has bigger problems with it for some people, but even aspirin has some problems. The steroid question is, were the steroids years ago weaker and less dangerous than the ones being made now?
Good question. It may shock some of your listeners to know that a lot of the steroid out there is meant for animals. It's veterinary steroids. Some of the more onerous steroids of the 80s have disappeared that were associated with particularly horrific side effects and so on. However, the substances out there now are extremely dangerous when abused because, as I said earlier on, they're all basically derivatives of testosterone in this massive doses of testosterone, which is producing so much of the problem. The thing that's happened is that the products out there are trying to be designed to avoid detection, which is very different than its effect on the body. So I think as a group, they're as bad today as they were. They just have, you're trading one series of problems for another series of problems. So it's, and part of the reason they're out there more now in some ways is because they're at low levels and low doses, they have therapeutic value for certain individuals, as I suggested earlier. But things like Decadorablin, which was big in the 80s, that's still around. Equipoise, as you can from the name, and for horses, is still around and being used. So, and so much of what people are getting, they don't know what they're getting. You have no idea what you're injecting into yourself when you're getting products from illegitimate sources. They may not contain steroids at all. So it's really quite a dangerous practice, just on from that point of view. Yeah.
We will have to stop there because we have come to the end of the time. Our guest, Gary Wadler, is a physician. He has practice in internal medicine and sports medicine in New York. He's also associate professor of clinical medicine at the NYU School of Medicine. He's the lead author of the book Drugs and the Athlete, has a special expertise in the field, as often quoted, and will be testifying before Congress on the subject on Thursday. Dr. Wadler, thank you very much for being with us today.
It's been my pleasure, and thank you very much.
Today's broadcast is made possible in part with support from Lincoln Square Village in Urbana, with more than a dozen shops, businesses, and restaurants, including Champaign County CASA, who recruits, trains, and monitors volunteer advocates for abused and neglected children. Funds for this day of broadcasting also come in part from a contribution by Charles Blair in honor of Albert Einstein on the anniversary of his birth in 1879. And that's it for us here on Focus. We want you to stay tuned because coming up next, it's the Afternoon Magazine. The host for the show, Celeste Quinn.
Thank you, David. Coming up today in the 1 o'clock hour of the Afternoon Magazine, we'll talk with social critic and journalist Ann Kingston. We'll talk with her about the meaning of wife. That is W-I-F-E. Ann Kingston joins us at 1:06 Central Time this afternoon. Let's take a look now at what's happening on the Chicago Board of Trade and Mercantile Exchange. March wheat trading at 3:48, down 3.5. July 3.61, that down 5. March corn 2.14, down 3.5. May 2.21 3/4, down 3. July corn 2.28 3/4, down 2 3/4. And December corn 2.43, down 2. March beans 6.55, that down 1 3/4. May 6.60, down 2.5. November unchanged at 6.34 1/2. March meal 192.20, down 380. March oil 2403, that up.